Did you?
38, was it?
Yes. January 1938. It was a patent for a regenerator and catalyst chamber.
Yes. Well, there really is not much to say about that. It's one of those things that look like the obvious thing to do.
You also recall earlier your experiences with Kettering, and you had done some work on a muffler replacement. Would you share that story with us, please?
I don't know whether I told of
I thought I told you that story last time. Is that one of the things
we discussed it at lunch. We didn't have it on tape.
Oh, I see. Well,
the first Stratton, the first president Stratton at MIT was Samuel Wesley Stratton, who had organized, set up the Bureau of Standards. And when he came to MIT as president, he was still thinking of his days in the Bureau of Standards, sadly for MIT. Stratton, one of his jobs was to raise money, and he was aware of General Motors' interest in the CO problem. And asked me once to analyze the gases in the garage of the Boston distributor for General Motors, for Cadillac and Oldsmobile. Alvin T. Fuller, the ex-governor of the state, had the Cadillac agency. And when Stratton read in the newspaper about somebody having invented a catalyst or having applied a catalyst to the problem of getting rid of carbon monoxide, Stratton came to Fuel and Gas Engineering, to John Ward, and told his story, and John Ward told it to me, and I said, a catalyst makes no sense for getting rid of CO. It'll poison too fast. What you want is a countercurrent heat exchanger that will burn out the CO in an ordinary thermal way. If you do a good job of countercurrent heat exchange, you need have only a minute amount of CO present to achieve a very high temperature at the combustion chamber, because the hot combustion products countercurrently exchange on the incoming CO oxygen mixture. You may have to bleed in a little bit of air if the mixture from the engine is rich, but you preheat those and then burn. And Stratton said, I'll get you some money, go ahead and work on it. So we got a test stand in the automotive lab, borrowed from the mechanical engineering department, and a Chrysler engine. And Les Bragg, one of our fuel and gas engineering research men, was put on that problem. And we developed a very good burner outer, which completely cleaned up the CO if the engine was running under a reasonable load. But if the engine was idling, the flow rates were so low and the heat losses so high that it wouldn't work on idling. So we built a little auxiliary gasoline-fired pilot that had to be turned on if you wanted this thing to clean things up when the engine was idling. If you would settle for clean up only when the engine was under load, it was a very simple device, no moving parts. I drew the picture of this device on a big piece of cardboard with flaps to cover up the part that included the gasoline addition when it was idling, so that when you looked at the drawing, you got the simple picture of a no-moving part cleaner-upper. And then you said, if you want it to work when the engine's idling, I have to open this flap and show what else would have to be in the device. And Stratton took me to New York to see Charles Kettering, the director of research of General Motors. I don't think the Kettering Foundation had been set up by that time yet.
What year was that?
Probably around 1931 or two. I must be right within a couple of years. I think that would hit it, 31 or two. Stratton and Kettering were good friends and had a lot to talk about, and Kettering was especially interested in talking about his newest sailboat that Harrishoff was making for him, and building for him, I should say. Finally, Stratton managed to interrupt and say, I've got young Hoddle here who has a story he'd like to tell, and so I got the floor, and I told my story, and Kettering looked at the drawing for a while, and finally said, our Chevrolet muffler costs us $1.98. I don't know what the number was, but I know it was under $3, and I think it was under $2. It was, by today's standards, a shockingly low figure, but reasonable for those days. And I swear you can't build this thing for less than $5. And the public isn't keen on it. They're not worked up about the problem. Sammy, that boat of mine is going to be a grand thing when it's done. Well, years later, Fay Taylor went to a West Coast meeting in the earliest days of California's worrying about smog, and Fay wanted to take along my report on the CO burner outer. But I couldn't find the report for him to take to the West Coast, I still haven't been able to find it. I have no idea what happened to those drawings either. Well, I may have told you that years later, during the war, I had another occasion to see Kettering. I don't know, did I tell that story?
I think that was also
tape?
At lunch. No, I think that was
also
at lunch.
At lunch, should I tell it?
Yes.
I was section chief for fire warfare in the MDRC, and one of the things that was in our area was flamethrowers, which the British had sent over Fred Garner to tell us about. They hoped we would join them in research on making better ones, and we included intermittent ones and ones large enough for tank mounting. And I thought it would be a good thing to get General Motors into a tank-mounted flamethrower with intermittent ejection. Intermittency permitted you to use a very much larger diameter nozzle and a much bigger gob of gel fuel so that the range should be much further than if you had a continuous device. But an intermittent device to eject gobs through a 4 or 5 inch nozzle was mechanically a big thing to build, and I thought it'd be good to get General Motors into it. Well, I talked to Kettering, and he was interested, but said he wanted to think about it. And when I went to him the second time, he said that he felt they were too heavy in the kind of war research they could do and knew they could do to use their talents in this development area, and they wouldn't join us. We had two other projects going on mechanized flamethrower after that, one with C.F. Braun on the West Coast, and one in Worcester with, I lost the name, and I had a very close friend there. The Morgan Construction Company in Worcester. Miles Morgan was the man working on it, and these were sort of substitutions for General Motors getting into the mechanized flamethrower area.
Would it be possible to review some of your graduate students, let's say up to the period of about 1941? I have some names here, and if you could just...
Well, my first graduate student was Vic Smith, Victor Claude Smith, and I thought that we ought to build an adiabatic compression machine to bring a reacting gas mixture up to reacting temperature very fast and hold it in steady pressure change. This meant a fast acceleration of a piston and then a fast deceleration, and a pressure pickup. And we were not as clever mechanical engineers as the mechanical engineering department people were, and I really shouldn't have got into this. Now, Smith was an able man and did some very good work, but we pretty much bogged down on research problems. I remember that the first piston we stopped had a 1-inch diameter piston rod which parted as though it had been in a tensile test machine. Mm-hmm. When we stopped the driving piston and let the driven one go ahead, and then we got into various damping devices. And at that time there was no reliable electronic amplifier, and pressure gauges were mechanical. One was a little fork that rubbed on a small diameter rod on a magnet surface. The magnet surface pulled the rod and the fork against it, and when you move the fork, the rod turned, and with a mirror on the rod, you got motion. But we had to protect that thing against the decelerating forces of this driven piston. And we mounted it in a heavy lead mount separately from the room. But we never really got good data. And we would have got into chain reaction kinetics, which we weren't ready to handle. We learned an awful lot in that first thesis, but you can't say it was a success as a thesis. My second doctor's thesis band was 2CM2, 2 Changming, who came from the far interior of China, in contrast to most Chinese who, the Chinese who got to us generally came from somewhere along the coast, the Shanghai area particularly. Two came from the far interior of China, from the Sichuan province. He had a rich uncle who was paying the bill. He worked on oxidation of carbon, turning out little spheres of carbon and hanging them in a horizontal tube furnace from a platinum mount, a platinum wire that the sphere was fastened to, and the other end of the platinum wire was a little ball bearing that sat in a jewel bearing with a paper turbine fastened to the wire, and by blowing on the turbine we could rotate the sphere and keep it from losing its roundness as it burned. And the whole thing was mounted for continuous weighing. Two got some very good data, and I followed up his work with another doctor's thesis by Hyman Davis, and still another one by Alman S. Parker. The paper with two was really the first paper that recognized in combustion the need for considering chemical kinetic resistance to combustion in series with diffusional resistance. And we formulated the diffusional and the kinetic effects. I may have said last time that that paper has finally been recognized by the publication year before last, 50 years later, the republication of the paper with two in that journal that the Journal of Heat Transfer has. It's an auxiliary journal that is concerned with the background for research, but I have forgotten the name of it. Anyway, they republished the old paper with two 50 years later, along with a commentary by two present-day people on the paper and on the implications of it.
Did your graduate students go into academic work or industrial work for the most part?
Two later became... He had come from Tsinghua University, which was sort of the MIT of China, And he went back and became head of chem engineering in the Central University, so-called, of China, which had to move, I think it moved to Chongqing during the war to keep going. Attu was head of that, of the chem engineering department there, and wrote me during the war about his work on gasoline substitutes from vegetable matter. At the end of the war, he'd accumulated a large vacation time, and as he went off on his vacation, he was killed in an airplane crash. Mm. And he must have been in his very early 50s when that happened. It's a sad loss. One of his students, Dr. Wu Pao-Chen, later did a doctorate with me. And Wu is in this country, and Wu and I are today working on a paper. I'm trying to think of the doctor's men who went into education. A fairly small percentage. Bill Clem was one who worked on the structure of jets in the days, the wartime days of interest in flamethrowers. And Clem was a professor somewhere, but I lost track of where. Will Hawthorne did his thesis with me before the war. We finished the write-up on it during the war when he was stationed in Washington in the British Central Scientific Office, a liaison office in Washington. Hawthorne later took a professorship at MIT and became the Westinghouse professor at MIT, and then Cambridge University, that he had graduated from, called him back, and he became head of engineering. And then later on became Master of Churchill College and was knighted as Master of Churchill College, and retired last year as, I guess, Dean of Engineering as well as Master of Churchill College. He still consults in this country, and I shall see him this December. He had done a thesis which he put the finishing touches on by going out into our practice school station at Buffalo and working with the students to get some data on mixedness in combustion chambers. And I think we made the first use of the term mixedness in the paper that we wrote, a series of three papers. The first one with Hawthorne, and the next one with Waddell, another thesis man who worked in that area, now with Monsanto, and another one by myself later on. Walter May came from, I guess it was the University of Saskatchewan. And did a doctorate with Glenn Williams and me. Glenn and I at this time were taking many thesis men in partnerships on combustion problems. When May got through, he had another Canadian professorship offered him and a job at Exxon, or then called Standard Oil Development Company, and he said he just couldn't afford to take the professor's job, so he went with SOD, and Waller is now back as, he's now got a professorship in a Canadian university. I guess he is retired from Exxon. Waller's a very able man, and they've got a good faculty member in him.
I have just a few other names here in the period before the war. Mangelsdorf, Eberhardt.
Well, there were two Mangelsdorfs. I should say there were 12 Mangelsdorfs. The father was head of a seed company in a Kansas town, and he had six children, I think, by his first wife. She died, and then he married her sister and had six more. And they have become a rather distinguished family. Paul is well known as the Harvard man who developed hybrid corn, was the world expert on hybrid corn at Harvard. And I used to have contact with him in connection with Cabot's solar program, because both Harvard and MIT had it, and I was in charge of the one at MIT, and Paul Mangelsdorf was in charge of the one at Harvard. But that was later than my first Mangelsdorf contacts. My first contact was with Ted Mangelsdorf, who was an assistant professor in the old fuel and gas engineering. And when fuel and gas engineering broke up, he went with a Texas company as director of research, and was senior vice president when he retired. He died a couple of years ago. His younger brother had a master's degree and came to us for some postgraduate work on an employment basis, and he worked for me on gas radiation measurement and did a superb job of getting data which are still considered data on CO2 and water vapor.